El episodio de hoy es en inglés y es traído a ustedes gracias a una colaboración que hice con Master Brewers o la Master Brewers Association of the Americas, una asociación de voluntarios de la industria cervecera, la cual busca traer lo último en tecnología e investigación en la industria cervecera. Este pasado 6 al 8 de octubre estuve en su conferencia anual o el Master Brewers Conference en la ciudad de Seattle en el estado de Washington. Y allí entrevisté a Shanley Thompson. Shanley es una consultora de la industria quien tiene una fascinante historia que va desde la ciencia de alimentos hasta ventas y muchas otras cosas más que van a escuchar en esta entrevista. Y nos habla de su carrera y por qué ella asiste a estas conferencias. Espero que disfruten de este episodio. Bienvenidos a The Food Engineer Podcast, un podcast dedicado a la exploración de alimentos y bebidas fermentadas. Yo soy tu anfitrión, Cristian Mercado.
Well, welcome to another episode of the Food Engineer Podcast. Today we have with me
Shanley Thompson.
Shanley, would you introduce yourself to the audience? What's your background and how you ended up in the brewing industry?
Absolutely. So my name is Shanley Thompson. I run Shan Ferments, which is a educational and consulting company for the brewing and sort of fermentation industry. I stick to brewing mainly because I could definitely drink back a couple bottles of wine. So beer is a little less drinkable to me. Just for that reason, I don't stick to wine and don't work with wine as much. So beer has been my passion since 2017, but I have been in the food science industry since 2008. So I did my degree at the University of Manitoba, particularly in food science and economics. And from there, went to the London School of Economics for economics in developmental studies. So basically working with up-and-coming communities in agriculture. So rural communities and how agriculture affects rural communities in economics. None of this really relates to beer. But from there, I went to Purdue University and was able to complete a master's of food science, focusing mainly on biochemistry, enzymology, working with Asian carp. So the proteins from Asian carp, and basically distilling those down into individual amino acids that would potentially have use. We didn't find much.
Yeah, and the world of amino acids is wide.
Exactly. And we would use it for different applications for agriculture. So particularly disease resistance in citrus crops, because one of my mentors worked in Florida, particularly with certain diseases that affected the watermelon and the citrus crops in Florida. So we were working with different proteins that would potentially help with that, because the Asian carp in the Wabash and Mississippi River are an invasive species. So trying to figure out what to do with them.
Okay.
Somehow, through all of this, I managed to get myself into a position at Diageo, making new products of Smirnoff and Smirnoff Ice.
Okay.
Right? Pretty big jump.
Yeah.
But so my baby, as I say, is the Smirnoff Peppermint Ice. So the one that looks like not Smirnoff Peppermint Ice. Peppermint Twist, pardon me. So the Smirnoff product that you can find here in the US and Canada that has the candy cane wrapper on it that is scratch and sniff, ridiculous product, but delicious. My brother, he says, in honor of me, every Christmas he drinks a whole bottle. I'm like, no, that's not in honor of anyone, honey.
That's a dedicated brother.
I have a good family. So from there, I decided to enroll in the UC Davis program, Master Brewers program. But at that time, it was a 2-year wait. So I worked for Diageo. I waited. I did some traveling after I stopped at Diageo. I'm not a corporate lady, let's be honest. And I was able to get into the 2017 program of UC Davis Master Brewers and Professional Brewers. And that really set me off into a completely new career trajectory, which was really wonderful and wholesome. As you probably understand and know, this industry is wholesome.
Yeah,
it's the word I would use. It's not always perfect, but people care for each other, especially brewers. They want everyone to succeed. They want the fellow person to succeed. I had never worked in an industry before where it wasn't competition. It was a sense of community.
Right. That's a lot of collaboration.
Exactly. So I was able to get a job in Washington. I'm Canadian. Again, I'm from Winnipeg, middle of nowhere. I always say it, the reference point, 8 hours north of Minneapolis, 4 hours north of Fargo. Just to give you a sense. So basically, I wasn't going home. I didn't want to go home. California was an option. I applied to a couple QA positions at Ballast Point before the takeover from Constellation Brands back in 2018. I didn't necessarily want to stay in California, but Oregon and Washington were very interesting to me. Essentially, I just didn't want to have to pack up my things and drive further than 10 hours. And of course, you're in Northern California, so that kind of limits you. Mm-hmm. But I picked the Seattle area. I said, you know what? Let's try Seattle. I'm not a winter person. I don't want to go where there's winter. I also don't love the heat. I'm not a hot weather person. So I want something mild, all right? I'm fair weather. Exactly. And I'm okay with that. So Seattle was the place. I applied for a position. I got the position as a head brewer at a place out of a gas station an hour from Seattle.
Interesting.
Oh, man. Interesting is not even the start of it. I won't name the brewery, but it was hilarious. So the first day I started, I did the interview. It was great. First day I started, I jumped into, I got there. It was a 6-2 shift, right? So great. I'm there at 6. Everything's great. The cellar guy rolls up. The head brewer, the guy who's training me, is not there. So I'm like, okay, this is fine. Whatever. It doesn't matter. But Corey, my cellar guy, he's like, don't worry. I got this.
Okay.
I'm like, okay, because it's locked. Like, the brewery's locked. 6 a.m. He jumps the fence into the backyard, breaks in to the brewery.
Okay.
Opens it from the inside. And I go, that seemed really easy for you. He's like, oh, I've been to prison, honey. Don't worry. And I'm like, okay, so I guess I'm starting with you. Like, that's awesome. So, like, my head brewer rolls in, like, maybe 20, 30 minutes later. I'm like, that's great. So I've just been with this guy who... Also, I found out is an electrician, not even a brewer. He doesn't even work there. He's just there for the free beer. So he cleans kegs.
Was he volunteering?
No, he just cleaned kegs for free beer. That's really what he did. He was an electrician. He made his own money. Don't worry.
And that was your first foray into brewing?
First position, first day of working in beer.
Nice.
That brewery definitely went under.
Could go up from there, yeah.
You'd think. I then worked for another brewery here in the Seattle area. Much better. Small system. Actually had a really great time, but it was an hour and a half commute one way. I just got sick of it because I live downtown Seattle. It was out of the city. Honestly, some lovely people. Amazing beer. Just too much of a commute. They went under last year.
a theme developing
here. The last
here.
One I worked for... I was the production manager for Ghost Fish Brewing here in Seattle. Okay. They also had some very interesting business plans and definitely some very interesting production practices. Reed, who's still there, actually, very talented brewer. And they've won several awards since I've left with their gluten-free beer. Okay. Reed is definitely the one who knows the most about that. And I'm really proud of him because we worked a lot on revitalizing some of their programs, especially with the yeast. They were just pitching blocks of yeast when I showed up. Mm-hmm. So basically buying a new brick of yeast every single brew.
Oh wow, that's expensive.
Yeah, really expensive. And they weren't using unitanks as unitanks. So they were transferring every single time. And it's like, no, a unitank can be fermentation and conditioning. Mm-hmm. And if you've got a turnover that's quick, like they were taking 4 to 6 weeks for one beer at that point. Anyways, from there, I went into ingredients. BSG was the first ingredient foray that I started with. I had Western Canada. Then I moved to YCH and in hops. So I know it's a long story, but.
No, I'm just amazed that perhaps it's because in how I found out about your project, Shan Ferments.
Yeah.
And I didn't know there was all this baggage behind it, right? And not baggage in a negative way, but you've gone through a lot of different facets of the industry, right? And coming from food science, like we were talking before the podcast, like you have a very technical background.
Yes.
But you've then tried all of the applications of those.
I worked for Manitoba Liquors and Lotteries. This was in between Brew School and Diageo. And so that was all about distribution. So in Canada, the government distributes your liquor.
Okay.
You can't distribute like as a private entity. Like, so there wouldn't be any private distribution. You couldn't have any private liquor stores, for example. It's all government owned.
Okay.
So I worked for that entity on supply chain and bringing in new beers from different provinces. The QA, what they're looking at for supply chain. Because as a government, you think, well, it's a government. It's got a lot of rules. But it was the only part of the government that was for profit.
Interesting.
So I was there to reduce costs, essentially. That was just my last little bit. You're right. I've been all over the industry. Technical is where my heart lies, though. Sales, I understand. And I think it really plays a part in technical that no one really talks about.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, certainly. My experience is a little bit different from yours, but I can see how you're really looking at the application of not only the science part, but then you get sales, and then you get distribution, then you get supply chain. So would it be fair to say that even if it hasn't been purposefully done, you've placed yourself in a position where you have a different outlook because you can connect the dots between the different parts of the business?
I would say I try. I would say I'm not perfect, and I can't say I'm an expert on everything. I think my strongest suit is technical. I can talk most eloquently, if you will, about the technical aspects, especially of the parts that I know the best, which would be hops at this point and biochemistry. So enzymatic, like hopcrete, for example, which is the enzymatic process that occurs because of what's on or in hops and like the new research that's going on with that. That's such a beautiful intersection for me. I love it. It's so pretty.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Let's say that 2 to 3 years ago when the term hop creep, which might be older, but when the term hop creep was in vogue, there was a lack of understanding of what is causing it. And there was also a lot of talk about how the yeast was involved in the process.
Totally.
And now we know a little bit different.
Yes.
Right? What are some of the things that have surprised you the most after you've learn what's come out from the technical side and the application side?
Absolutely. I mean, let's start with, you know, the technical side. To me, there are so many different avenues that we can take a look at and what researchers have looked at as far as hopcrete goes. What is fascinating to me is that despite some of these advances in hopcrete information, not all the brewers have this information. It's still at a very academic level. What I found in this industry is that there's tiers, right? And I'm sure you can corroborate with this. There are tiers of information, right? Here at the MBAA, we're at the forefront, which is why I love this conference. This is my favorite conference, as much as CBC to me is. CBC is a party. I love it.
Right.
It's so much fun.
They're very different.
Very different. But here we're getting the ground level. We're getting the best information. We're getting the newest information. Two brewers that really want this information, but not a lot of this new technology gets disseminated amongst the average brewer.
Right.
Right. So some of this information may or may not be given to everyone. Right. And it'll take a couple of years for it to get widely spread to different brewers. And so when we talk about hop crepe, I'm 100% certain there are certain brewers that are amazing brewers that don't know about hop crepe. I would guarantee it. Mm-hmm. And you'd be surprised at who those are, because they might be very, very good brewers, but they just don't have the access to knowledge like that, or they're not looking at academic papers. They don't necessarily get that information for whatever reason. It's access to knowledge that actually is quite a barrier to a lot of people that could be the difference between a great brew or a good brew and a great brew. You know what I'm saying?
Like, or a beer that doesn't stay well for a long time,
exactly.
Like bottle bombs or
exactly.
Bombs.
So to me, hop crepe is a fascinating illustration of a barrier to information amongst brewers. There are a lot of people that understand it exceptionally. There are a lot of people that don't know anything about it. And they might have been in the industry at the exact same time and for the exact same length of time. They might be essentially the same brewers, but the access to information could be completely different. So hop crepe to me is a great example of there's information out there. There's new research out there. We don't completely understand it, but some people don't even know about it yet.
Right.
Right.
I like that you mentioned the difference between the associations. And I like to make a point out of that in a constructive manner, right?
Yeah, of course.
We have associations that are for individuals like MBAA, and we have organizations that are for companies as a whole, more
yes.
like lobbying efforts.
Of course.
If you were to talk to someone that is starting out, how would you perhaps counsel them to go about it?
It depends on where they are in the industry. If you're a brewer, CBC. Actually, if I'm being honest with you, GABF. That was my first event in the beer industry,
mm-hmm.
and I was solo. I wasn't even with the brewery. I just showed up. And I was able to meet so many people in my own industry in a manner that was not, that's the word I'm looking for. It wasn't intimidating.
Okay.
Because it's GABF. It's a consumer-focused event, right?
Right.
So the brewers that are there, the owners that are there are not necessarily there to be catering to their peers. They don't necessarily expect fellow brewers to be there. So I was lucky enough to be taken under the wing of Beer Paper LA, the editor of Beer mm-hmm. Paper LA, Dan Drennan, incredible individual, also 6 foot a million, so easy to spot. And he's like, "You are lost." And I said, "I am so lost." And he's like, "I'm going to help you." And that's literally what he said. And he's like, "Here's the people that you need to know right now."
Okay.
And that's Maui Brewing's owner, Garrett Marrero, dear friend of mine, because of interactions like that. If you're starting out in the industry, I would say the best thing to do, network like crazy. So yeah. CBC, GABF, events where there's tons of people. Everyone's just there for a good time. Honestly, like I met like David Walker from Firestone Walker
mm-hmm.
at GABF because he's the one serving the beer. He was this yes. year as well.
That's crazy.
Isn't that wild?
Yes.
But you go up to him and you're like, "I'm a new brewer." And he goes, "Yes, you are. I'm proud of you." Do you understand the kind of like light that creates in anyone? Like David Walker doesn't know you from Hillaby's. I guarantee you if I walked up to him and be like, "You said this 8 years ago," he'd be like, "Oh, no idea who you are."
Right.
Which is fine. But in that moment as a new brewer where it matters, those kind of interactions absolutely are crucial. So as a new brewer, I would say CBC, GABF, where you can interact with some people that have high influence,
mm-hmm.
go meet as many people as you can. If you're an idiot, they won't remember you. It doesn't right. matter. Like, everyone's there for a good time. This is a networking industry.
It is.
It is. I mean, look how we met.
Yeah.
It's a networking industry. You have to just meet people. It's annoying when you do. Well,
I think, and I know you haven't asked me for my opinion.
Yes.
But
no, I want your opinion.
Each one of them has like a different flavor of networking.
Yes.
So perhaps you network here with a different set of people.
This is the advance.
Yes. This is the major league.
The major league. I love that. No, because you know as well as I do, MBAA is the tech nerds.
Yeah.
We're here because we want to learn, which is right. A different vibe, mm-hmm. you know? And it is more intimidating. Honestly, even for me, like, you're going to meet people that have created some of the most important elements of brewing. Yeah. The newest techniques, the newest research. People paid a lot of money, not only to be here, but to talk to people and talk about what they're researching. That's cannot be understated.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, it's intimidating because it's like there are people here that I get nervous talking to.
Oh, certainly.
Yeah.
Actually, let me ask you something. Who have you met here that you've gotten starstruck? Definitely not me, but.
Man, it's been a while, but like, honestly, I still get starstruck by like some of the big breweries, like mm-hmm. anyone from the Sierra Nevada. If I see Vinny from Russian River, I still get nervous.
Yes.
I'm not going to lie. I get nervous. Like, I've met him so many times. Like, such a sweetheart. Him and Natalie.
And we're talking about Vinny Chiliruso
from Russian River and Natalie. And I get nervous. Like, yeah. With those kind of people, I get really nervous. And the funny thing is, I interact with people that are their peers, people who work with them. Like, daily or monthly, you know, part of the Hop Quality group, you know, mm-hmm. they're friends of mine, and it still makes me so nervous. I'm like, hi, Vinny, it's so nice to see you. It's like that makes me nervous. Like,
yeah,
they created the industry, like, mm-hmm. no doubt in my mind, they created this hypeness that really has done wonders for this industry and involved consumers to a point where consumers now ask about beer, what's in the beer, what the ingredients are, how beer is different. Mm-hmm. And I think that is just incredible.
Yeah.
To create something like the way that, you know, Sierra Nevada has.
Mm-hmm.
They've done such an incredible job for the industry that I don't even know that they know the impact.
As a note to that, or mm-hmm. as a footnote,
yeah.
On my first conference, I met Vinny.
Oh my gosh!
And yeah, it was a starstruck.
But
moment.
He's so sweet.
Yes,
he's the nicest man.
Yeah, like, he even told me on that day that he was looking for someone to fill that position if I wanted to just go to move to California. I'm like, wow.
Yeah,
I can, but thank you.
I know. Like, that's just it. People like Vinny. People like. I met Dressler, who was the first official brewmaster of Sierra Nevada.
Okay.
So this is back in the 80s. I met him because I went to brew school in California, and he didn't even really teach a class. He just showed up. I met Dressler he's like, I bought an RV, and I'm going with my wife, and we like bourbon. And I'm like, that's amazing. Like, I don't know what to say to that, but you're amazing. And like, that was the conversation I had with him, was the fact that like, he was retiring. Now I'm going to go in an RV. My kid loves chess. And I'm like, I don't know what to say to that either. But those are the interactions you have. And you're like, this is one of the most famous men in beer.
Yeah.
This is one of the most famous people in beer, period. You know, like, Laura from Omega Yeast.
Oh my God.
She's
what a person.
Oh, I know. She makes me nervous too. I met her I just stole a t-shirt from her. Like, it makes me nervous.
Yeah.
I'm like, do you think Laura would be okay with this? It's like, of course Laura would be okay with that. You brought t-shirts, all right? Like, you know, the thing about this industry is they're real people.
Mm-hmm.
Which, for better or for worse, and there's a lot of issues with this industry, but for better or for worse, there are real people that exist in this industry that may not have ever started in this industry. Like, where did you start?
Wow. It's the first time that I'm getting interviewed. So I started from an engineering perspective and moved into food science. Mm-hmm. And I came to this very conference 3 years ago because I was putting a poster in the poster board.
Awesome.
And
where was it 3 years ago?
Ohio, Cleveland.
I probably met you because I was running the YCH booth.
So I guess we've established that these are the places to go networking.
Yes.
Right. Exactly. Conferences, like you mentioned, GABF, which I had quite an experience there. To me, was overwhelming.
Of course.
And then how do you go from there, right? You have had science background, a brewing background, a bit of a supply chain background.
Yeah.
What does Shanley do now?
Well, right now I'm working on one of my old, let me not get into it, but I'm no longer with the last company because of some issues with a previous supervisor. But one of the things that they said to me was, well, you're just trying to be an influencer, which by no means am I ever trying to be an influencer because they work way harder than I do. Let's be honest.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
At least to my
standard. Yeah, I mean, I can't keep up with that kind of stuff. I'm an educator. So my role, at least to me, is I've seen behind the curtain, mm-hmm. right? I've seen how hop suppliers work. I've seen how malt suppliers work. What I am attempting to do right now is be a resource for the industry. So exactly what we talked about, taking what we're learning here at the MBAA or in, I Google Scholar pretty much daily at this point,
mm-hmm.
looking at new articles that have relevancy in the industry and saying, how can I distill this down to be helpful,
mm-hmm.
right? Because to me, I can see where they're helpful, but to an average brewer who might not have the background. I know a lot of brewers are like, I used to do TV repair. Great. Amazing. That's incredible. But like, they don't have a biochemistry background like I do.
Mm-hmm.
How can these research papers that are breaking edge, absolutely incredible information, how can they help an average brewer? So right now I'm working with a couple different universities to basically start their brewing program. That's kind of like what I'm mainly focused on right now, my blog, which essentially breaks down those papers and in trying to do more of that. But I'm also working on an MBA starting in January at UC Davis.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you. It's online because I'm an application for my green card and I don't want to screw that up. Definitely don't want to screw that up. So doing it online, but they have like, what's really cool about Davis is obviously I'm an alumni because of the brewing program, but their MBA focuses not only on tech, but because it's the UC Davis Aggies, mm-hmm. they work on agricultural food and wine. So quarterly, they do like a 4-credit course where mm-hmm. you go down to Napa or you go down into an agricultural area and you network and you work with wineries and you work with these different companies more on the business side. Because I looked at doing a PhD and I think, what an incredible opportunity, but
it takes a special type of personality to do that.
I don't,
too, right?
And I don't a commitment. Like being in a lab. I am not a lab lady, you know, like I enjoyed it, but I like talking to people
mm-hmm.
too much. That's why I love sales.
That's why
I love
here.
Technical sales, you know, it's so fun.
In your blog and in your page where you translate a lot of this technical information, and not only that, but I recently read one about how, for example, hop contracts might not be the answer anymore. And to me, I've been evangelizing hop contracts to some of my clients as an option. And when I read that was, okay, there's someone here that has a dissident opinion. And I like that. So how do you go about that? And what's the expected outcome?
Sure.
From those type of articles that you're doing.
So especially, let me touch on the hop contracting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not against hop contracting. I think it needs to be taken with a grain of salt. Mm-hmm. I think people need to understand what a hot contract means. Let me ask you a question first. When you talk about and evangelize, as you mm-hmm. say, hot contracts, what do you say are the pros? Why would you tell a brewery to get a hop contract?
I would say if they're making a stable product mm-hmm. consistently mm-hmm. and they know they're going to have a certain demand, they should lock down a price on the long run that would benefit them
yep.
to be able to make that product at a lower price.
Totally.
That's about it.
No, and I agree with that. Again, I am not against hop contracting, but on the back end, did you know that if you provide a contract to a distributor, that goes directly to a farmer? Mm. So that farmer has to plant what you told them that you wanted of okay. that variety. So that impacts a real life grower mm-hmm. in real time. And what happens is, in a situation like this year where we have a 40 million pound overage, you've got people who are being impacted heavily because they thought they were going to have X amount of profit because of these hops. But they're being told, especially with their proprietary hops, so Citrus, Simcoe, Mosaic, they have to rip it out of the ground. And they can't replace that. It takes 3 years for a hop to mature mm-hmm. to get to a point where you can sell it reasonably. You right. can sell baby hops, but not at the same amount, mm-hmm. you know, same volume. So hop contracts to me are, you need to be selective and you need to work with your supplier, but not only supplier, you need to talk to hop growers. They need to be part of the focal discussion. Those kind of articles I can write because, like my previous company, like other companies in supply chain in hops, they don't want to talk about that. Contracts look really good to the board of directors, to the people that own the company, shareholders. The more hop contracts you have for the future, the better it looks. Mm-hmm. There's absolutely no argument with that. And as a previous salesperson, I'm not upset with salespeople for doing that. That is coming from top down. That's CEO level kind of stuff. And so understanding how it not only impacts the brewer, but understanding how it impacts a farmer at the back end. Mm-hmm. Like one of my favorite hop growers I saw last week, he had to cut out 25% of his hop crop.
Wow.
He only has 80 acres. He doesn't have a big hop crop. That's a small amount.
It's 22 acres. That's a lot.
So 25% of that, he's now gone from 80 to about 50, mm-hmm. like 50 acres. That's a huge proportion of his profits for the year. Huge. Mm-hmm. And he can't grow anything else there for the next 3 years.
Right.
So when you look at contracting, and again, it does provide a blueprint for farmers, and I think it's super important, especially for larger companies, mm-hmm. you have to take into account that when you change that, it does impact someone on the back end substantially. Not even the salespeople really talk about that either. Because it looks good.
Right.
Get a big contract. We'll deal with it later. Of course. Mm-hmm.
So I would say that you're now bringing a perspective that sheds light into the different tiers of a contract, mm-hmm. into the impact that it can have to a real person at the end of the day, that it's not just you and the supplier. It's also the person that is there. It's like a know your farmer
exactly.
type of deal, right?
Exactly. And that's why people like CLS Farm, so Eldorado Zappa, they and Virgil Lamash, who are in charge, well, own the brand of Amarillo, mm-hmm. they are very involved in their own research and do direct sales or work with farmers directly. So they don't necessarily go with the distributors on their direct involvement. Which I think is important. I think talking to farmers and whatever they decide or whatever they want to say is really who you should be listening to in the end. Mm-hmm. I, as a previous salesperson, I'm impacting a farmer when I sell a product. And that included malt too. Mm-hmm. I'm impacting a barley farmer. I'm impacting a farmer on the back end, especially at my last job with Hops. I think that's lost in translation a lot of times. And not a lot of brewers really can acknowledge that they are impacting a person. But not only that, this year, especially with the economic situation that we're in with the $4 million overage, we have to acknowledge that that actually impacts not just the hop supply chain, beer supply chain, but that impacts everyone,
right,
all the agricultural supply chains, because those 25%, those acres that have been ripped out, over 5,000 acres in Yakima, or predominantly Yakima, Washington, Idaho, and Oregon, could have been fruit trees,
could have been
apples, could have been anything else. And that's the problem, is that when you have proprietary hops, and I'm not against proprietary hops, I think there's a time and place for Citra, Mosaic. I think mm-hmm. there needs to be proprietary hops because they have a lot of support from their owners, right?
Right.
There should be proprietary hops. But problem is that a farmer will sign a 5-year contract with the intention of growing 5 years, 80 acres of those hops, and they have absolutely no control over it.
Right.
They can be told at any time, actually, we don't want any of your hops. Rip the whole thing out of the ground. And that farmer has used valuable land, valuable nitrogen that could have been used for something else.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's hops can grow anywhere, but the best hops grow on some of those premier lands.
Mm-hmm. You make me think about this previous interview that I did. Can't recall the episode right now, but we interviewed Loza Farms.
Yeah. Oh, you interviewed Loza?
Yes.
Did you interview Junior?
I did.
I love Junior.
Junior alongside Peter.
Yes.
From YCH.
Yes.
And the one of the
Pete's,
yeah.
Pete Venegas.
Yes.
I love Pete. He's here.
He is?
Yeah.
I haven't
Petey.
Seen him.
Oh, yeah.
So I got to go meet him.
Oh, he's the best.
So one of the things that I learned from them, and it's ingrained in me, when Junior said, when you support our farm, you got to know that from every dollar that you give us, 90-something cents of that dollar goes to equipment,
yep,
to manufacturing, to processes.
Yep.
It doesn't go to my fridge to buy beer. It doesn't grow. No, it goes
exactly.
to...
Exactly.
And if there's an overage, he's just going to get a new truck or repair his
exactly.
old truck.
Exactly. And Pete Venegas, I have to say, is one of the most intelligent people in this industry. I think Pete is incredibly level-handed as a human being.
Yeah.
Because he works for a supplier and a distributor, but he doesn't work for them. He works with the growers. So he knows exactly the impact that the company he works for is having.
Mm-hmm.
So he is incredibly level-handed. And I respect the hell out of Pete. But Junior is the best. Oh. Junior welded that whole damn place together himself. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
I have been lucky enough to be out there.
Oh, really?
Oh, I've met his family. It is incredible. I've met Senior Loza, who is an absolute badass. Oh, my God. The Lozas are some of the most incredible people on the planet.
It's so amazing, but also so fortuitous that there are all these people that we've met independently.
Yeah.
We haven't ever met each other.
I do that a lot, man. Like, I've met a lot of people are like, oh, we've never met. I don't know. I'm flighty.
Yeah.
I see people I know. I'm like, I gotta go.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing.
I love people, but the industry, and honestly, my last job was wonderful. There was a lot of very low points, and I won't get into that, but I mm-hmm. definitely appreciate people like Pete Venegas and his phenomenal wife, and how they brought a lot of us salespeople into the fold when it came to, you know, the Lozas, who one of the most fantastic farms, minority owned, incredible human beings. I think that's what a beautiful story.
The
what
only story. Hispanic owned hop farm.
Yes, exactly. And I mean, Pete himself got the Order of the Hop as the first Mexican-American person on the face of the earth. That's incredible. Yeah. Like, that's insane. Like, and it should have gotten Pete. Like, he is so deserving of that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've since left the company a long time ago, and every time I see him, I give him a hug. Like, he and I go, like, he knows that I am not here slandering a company or what he's doing. He knows he's for the farmers, I'm for the farmers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what's important and what a lot of folks don't really prioritize. You know what I'm like? It's the farmers need to be prioritized and need to have a seat at the table as much as a brewer does when it comes to their hops.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't always happen. But Pete's trying to make it happen, and I appreciate the hell out of Pete.
I'm glad that we've had this conversation without having thought that this was going to happen like this, right? That we knew all these people that I thought it was going to be more food science, and we ended up being in the crux of the industry. What's next for Shanley?
That's right. I don't know yet. My MBA, I put down, they make you like put your 5-year plan on. So I was like, you know, I ChatGPT put that together. No, I'm kidding. I was like, what do I do, ChatGPT? I'm like, this is what I'm done. No, I definitely want to work more on strategy. I am a huge strategy person. I know that sounds mm-hmm. really weird, like, especially from a technical standpoint, but I believe to have a very weird perspective and a different perspective than a lot of people who run companies nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what that looks like. I don't know what industry that looks like. I'm a marathon runner. I love running.
Mm-hmm.
That might look like non-alcoholic beer. That might look like working for Lululemon. That might look like something completely outside of this industry. But coming back to events like this, some days I just hate this industry. Let's be honest. Like, I just get so upset because it feels like sometimes the bad guys are winning. You know what I'm saying? It's difficult. It's yeah. not an easy industry, especially as a minority, especially as a woman, to be in. And sometimes you just don't want to be in it anymore. And I know a lot of people who have given up. And I've been real close. Even lately, I've been real close. I don't know what it looks like. But every time coming to a conference like this, it's a warm hug.
Yeah.
You know, it's a big old hug.
Yeah.
Like, even from people that, like, I have not seen in a long time or people I used to work with. And maybe, like, some of these companies I did not end well with. But my coworkers I love.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to make people understand sometimes leaving a company doesn't mean that you don't like the people at the company. It means you don't like the company.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been able to see some of my coworkers that I absolutely adored and would love to see more of mm-hmm. at multiple different companies. And I think that's important to understand, especially in this industry. It is difficult. It's difficult. But it's a warm hug when you know the right people.
Shanley, it's been eye-opening to meet you. We have transgressed the different layers.
I'm sorry, I do that.
No, and I like that.
Good.
So I really want to wish you a lot of good luck with not only your project in Shanley Ferments, so look her up, but also...
Talk shit about a lot of people. No, I'm kidding.
But also on your MBA.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
Yes.
It's going to be weird. So I don't know.
Where can people find you? Like, what are all your handles?
All my handles. At Shan Ferments on Instagram. ShanFerments.com. I have a Substack, which mm-hmm. is my weekly, more like monthly at this point. No, I'm kidding. It is definitely weekly. Just it's been a weird month. It's a newsletter. Basically, I break down a scientific topic each mm-hmm. week. I'll be back at it next week.
Yeah.
I'll be at numerous different conferences, this being one of them, but I'll also be at the Brewers Lectures, which you can find online. That's on October 18th. And I'll be at the BC Brewers Conference, BC Brew Convention, whatever it's called.
BCC?
BCC on the 19th and 20th. So definitely find me there if you're Canadian or just want to come up to Vancouver.
Awesome. Thanks for making time for this. I know it's been a pretty hectic conference overall, but...
I can't imagine you're still standing, man. It's tiring.
I'm here. This has been the source of it all. So cheers.
Cheers. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
Este episodio fue producido y editado por su servidor, Cristian Mercado. La música es de Pedro Lavezari. Pueden conseguir la música de Pedro Lavezari en Bandcamp o pueden ir a las notas de este episodio yendo a thefoodengineerpodcast.com y allí van a encontrar un enlace que los va a llevar directamente a la página de Pedro Lavezari en Bandcamp. Apoyen al que apoya nuestro podcast. Hasta luego.